And we're holding on page Ayin He in Kiddushin, the middle of Ois Lamed Gimel, about seven lines or so from the top of page Ayin He. We're in the middle of the Gemara had started before with a list of Asora Kavin, various qualities that 10 Kavin of them, 10 measures of them came into the world. And each one of them, we said there was one area that got 9 of them, and then one that got one, and then the rest of the world got the remaining one. So now continuing, so we were in the middle, we had talked about Gassus or Ruach, about Gaiva, and that caused the Gemara to digress a little bit about where exactly in their times Gassus or Ruach was mainly to be found. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Asara kavim gvura yod la'olam. 10 measures, 10 kavim of strength came down to the world. Tisha, not the Parsi and Mechola, 9 of them the Persians got and one the rest of the world. The Gemara later on in the Masechta mentions that Rebbe asked Levi, his Talmud, to describe for him the Persian, give him a word picture of the Persian army, and Levi describes that they're as powerful as the army of Beis David. So we see that the Persians had a lot of physical, raw physical strength. There's a sicha where that ever talks about, there's a number of places, including later in the Masechta, where it talks about the Persians are compared to a bear in one of Yechezkel's, not Yechezkel's, in one of Daniel's visions, he sees a creature looking like a bear that represents the Persians, and Gemara explains there's a number of ways. So there's a sicha where that ever talks about the deeper meaning behind the name Shalom Dov Bear, that the Dov Bear, the double bear over there, refers to this quality of strength that the bear has, which now a Yid can use for Kedusha. Next, so the Gemara leaves the Vecholu is because we know it means the rest of it same as before. It means the Persians got 9 and everybody else got the remaining one. Asar kabim kinim yodol olam. 10 measures of lice came down to the world. Tisha not la modai Vecholu. 9 of them modai got and one the rest of the world. Modai is an area, like Toras and modai. Nowadays it's part of Iran. Asar kabim kshofim yodol olam. 10 measures of kishuf, of sorcery, came, black magic came down to the world. Tisha, not the Mitzrayim, the Mitzrayim got 9 of them. As we know, in Moshe Rabbeinu's times, Mitzrayim was the world capital of kishuf, and even long afterwards, the Gemara has in Masechta Sanhedrin several stories showing that even in the times of Amoraim, Egypt was still a major center of kishuf in the world. Which means, by the way, also it tells us, therefore, that when the Chartumim in Mitzrayim say Etzba Avikimhi, that means a lot more than it would have if the magicians of anywhere else in the world had such a thing. Alderach, like it says, for example, about Yisroi, he had worshipped all the Getchkas in the world, so now he, more than anybody else, is capable of saying and really meaning that Hashem is more powerful than any other power in the world, and similarly with several other examples like that. Next, Asara Kavim Negoyim Yodel Olam, 10 Kavim of Negoyim, of Tsaras, came down to the world. Tisha, not the Chazirim, pigs got 9 of them. A pig's skin is covered with blotches that resemble Tsaras. And the Gemara mentions in some other places as well that they're particularly prone to that disease. Asara Kavim Znus Yodel Olam, 10 Kavim Znus came down to the world. Tisha, not the Arabia, Arabia got 9 of them. Later on, when the Arabs started spreading throughout the whole world, they and their religion, then they kind of brought that mentality along with them. You have famously their whole idea of the Gan Eden with the 72 versions, and you have the Rambam mentions in Hilchos Teshuva when he's explaining what Olam Haba is and isn't, and he says you have some people who think that Olam Haba is not really worthwhile unless it's a place of gashmiistic pleasures, and he uses the expression going Elu ha'arvim ha'sholim ha'shufim bezima, like these foolish Arabs who are steeped in zim. Like they think that that's the ultimate that a person can enjoy in the world. So they got 9 of the 10 measures of znus. Asara kavim azus yodel olam, 10 kavim of azus of chutzpah came down to the world. Tisha notla meishan v'chola, meishan got 9 of them. Meishan is an area nowadays. It's in southern Iraq. Basically, the area where the Tigris and Euphrates, the Chidekel and Pros rivers meet, and then go to the Persian Gulf. That area is called Meishan. In the times of the Gemara, as we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, it was a place where there was a large concentration of mamzerim there. And the Gemara explains that the Chazal explained in various places that Mamzeros and Azus go together. Mamzerim tend to be Azeponim. So 9 measures of it ended up in Meshan. Asara kaven sicha yorda la'olam. 10 measures of talk, of speech, came down to the world. Tisha, not the noshim b'chola, 9 of them women got. As we know, if anybody knows that women tend to be more social and talkative than men. Sometimes, of course, you know, we'll use it as a joke to put them down, but on the other hand, the fact is, it's not, you know, it has its advantage. It means that they're more sociable and more friendly to one another. That's actually, there's a mila in it. There is also an explanation, by the way, that the sicha over here, we know, ein sicha ela tefila, so it also means that women have a greater affinity towards davening than men do. There was, by the way,
why aren't women allowed to be part of a minyan?
They can't be part of a minyan because a minyan has to be men. A minyan is more of a public thing, and we learn it from the Meraglim, who were men. But they have more of an affinity for private davening, a personal one-on-one conversation, so to speak, with Hashem. That's another meaning of the Tisha Kaben Sicha. I once read where, as a joke, some Rav points out that actually, based on, if you read the Gemara more carefully, he says women actually have 9.5 measures of the speech. And I guess the same thing would apply to all the others. Because listen, the expression is, women got 9, and kol ha'olam kula got 1. Well, kol ha'olam kula is half women. He meant it as a joke, obviously, but yeah. Okay. Next. Asara kabim shachrus ushichrus yodel olam. 10 kabim of shachrus, is the Ein Yaakov's girsa, would mean of blackness. Shichrus is the girsa, and the printed Gemara means drunkenness. Anyway, 10 measures of that came down to the world. Tisha notar kushan or notla kushim chulu. Kushan, which would be the name of an area, in Arabia or something, took 9 of that, or the Girsa and the printed Gemara, not the Kushim, the Kushim, the Ethiopians and Africans in general, got 9 measures of that. Many of them are, in fact, they have a harder time holding their liquor than people of other ethnic groups. Asara kaven shena yodel olam. 10 measures of sleep came down to the world. Tisha, not the avodim, the echad not the kol olam kolay. Slaves got 9 of them, and the rest of them, the whole rest of the world got the 1, which the Gemara mentions in Pesachim. It says 5 things that Canaan told his children, which actually the Rashbam explains that he didn't literally tell them. It just means, in other words, that these things are so commonly found among avodim, many of whom descend from Canaan, which is why they're called avodim Canaanim, that it's almost as if Canaan actually gave such instructions to his children, and one of them is love sleep. So avodim love to sleep and to slack off on the job. Elsewhere, the Gemara has the expression, avda befkeira nichale, and Eved would like to have a life of efkeira, a life where he can do whatever he wants and not have to be subject to anything, whereas, really, being an Eved means being bottled, means being bottled to your master, and in our case, being bottled to our master, the Eveshter, and doing what he says and not slacking off with sleep. A few blocks later, the Mishnah talks about, so again, this Perek is talking about various dinim involving Kiddushin, so now it starts talking about various possibilities. What can a man use for Kiddushin? We talk about in Halacha, basically, among other things, the object that he's using for Kiddushin, the Kesef or Shava Kesef, has to belong to him. In fact, in Halacha, you really have the acid test. Does something really belong to you? Can you use it to be Mekadosh a woman? Now, so the Mishnah talks about, what about, for example, a Kohen received a portion of Kodshim, he received a portion of a Korban, can he now use that to be Mekadosh a woman? So the Mishnah says that he can't. There's different opinions of Tanoim about it, as we're going to learn in another piece soon in the Gemara. Anyway, then the Gemara starts dealing with the Machloikas Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. What about, in fact, is there ever a time, now either the Kohenim are each given a portion of the Korbanos that are brought that day, can they trade one for the other? Okay, are there any times when they can say, for example, you know what, if we split up, for example, this Korban Mincha, which is a grand total of an Isorin, which is a Shir Chali, you're talking like 3 to 5 pounds of flour, there are 100 of us over here. If we divide it among all of us, each of us is going to get only a tiny, tiny pinch of flour. How about we trade off and you take my portion from this one and I'll take your portion from the next one? So in general, you're not allowed to do that. Each person has to get their own, but Rav and Rabbi Yochanan argue in the Gemara whether there are any cases when such a thing is valid. So now the Gemara brings in this connection, and in connection with the division of the Lechem Aponim. Tanya, we learn in a brisa, hatsnuin moshkenes yedehen. The tsnuin, the people who are more. Now, what it is like this. This is Torah with brisa. Rashi brings the context of it is a Gemara in Yuma that says during the years when Shimon HaTzadik was Kohen Gadol, the 40 years when he was Kohen Gadol, among other things, there was a brocha in the lachem upon him. So even though there were a very large number of Kohenim, and how much lachem upon him is already going to go when you divide it among the whole mishmar, each one is only going to get a tiny portion. Nevertheless, everybody could be full for this. There was a bracha in the food, in the lachem upon him, and a person would eat that tiny amount, a kazayas even, and he would be full from it. Some of them were even so full that they couldn't even eat the whole kazayas. After Shimon HaTzadik passed away, then the Braisa goes on to say that there was a curse in the lachem upon him. So now, it doesn't fill them up like the way it did before. So now, if a Kohen gets a kazayas piece, he's going to eat it regardless, because with that he's mekayim the mitzvah of eating it. In general, in halacha, eating is a kazayas. But suppose he gets less than a kazayas. In Shimon HaTzadik's times, he'd take it anyhow. It's less than a kazayas, he's not mekayim the mitzvah, but at least it would fill him up. Now, if he gets, for example, a piece the size of a bean, it's not enough to fill him up. It's not enough to fulfill the mitzvah. So the Braisa says, "Hatsnuin, the ones who are more tsniestik, the ones who are more reserved and not the kind to push themselves forward, moshkenes yedehem, they would hold themselves back from taking from lachem upon him. Because anyway, they're not going to be able to accomplish much by getting a piece of it.
So then, you could argue that if he's five and six,
I don't know. It's a good question, but in any case, at least he accomplished something from it. He got him to fill himself up with lachem upon him. But now, after Shimon HaTzadik's times, we're saying they wouldn't even bother because they're only going to get a bean-sized portion anyhow. It's not going to be enough to fill them up, and it's not going to be enough to be yotzei the mitzvah. But the greedy people, chokim, they would divide it. Now, what does it mean they would divide it? So Rashi explains the context. The Gemara is assuming the word chokim means that they would trade their portions one with the other. So one gargaron would say to the other, listen, right now I'm slated to get only a bean-sized piece of this lachem upon him. It's not going to do me much good anyway. So how about you take my bean-sized portion of lachem upon him, and later on, when another mincha is brought, then you'll get my portion. So it sounds like chokin, it sounds like they're allowed to do that, which would fit to, and again, Rav and Rav Yochanan are, what the Gemara talks about actually is Rav and Rav Yochanan are arguing within Rav Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda had said that they can't do that. Did he change his mind? So it sounds like he did change his mind, because otherwise, who is this Braisa like? The answer is no. My chokin chotvin. The word chokin in this Braisa does not mean they divide it as it's considered their portion, and therefore they can trade off one to the other. It actually, the word chokin over here means they would take a portion, chotvin, they would grab that portion.
Okay.
So they would just grab whatever is available, even if it's only a bean-sized piece. They would just, they would grab, and they would even grab from other people. A gargaron, the gluttonous people, would not be satisfied with getting only a bean-sized portion. They would grab from others as well. That's what the braisa means when it says chokin. So in fact, you can't say that they can trade off one for the other. Kidikatoni sefer. As in fact, the braisa continues, maisa be'echot shechotav chelke v'chel, which by the way, I mean, you could say when they're grabbing, the fact is, if they get enough to make up a kazayas, they are mekayim in the mitzvah. Nevertheless, they're doing it in a chutzpahdik way. They're grabbing, therefore we can call them out for it. We can still call them gargaronim. We can still call them that they're gluttonous because they're doing the mitzvah, but not doing it in the derech eretz tikkun way that the mitzvah ought to be done.
Not really doing the mitzvah because doing the mitzvah through an avera, which is stealing.
It's not stealing. It's not stealing. They're taking. They're saying that snuim are holding back, so therefore the gargaronim are grabbing what's available anyway. The Tznurim are not taking it anyway, so they grab whatever is available. But Kedikatoni is safer. We learn in the continuation of the Braisa. Maisa be'echad shechotav chelke v'chelet chaveiroi. One time, one of these gluttonous Kohenim grabbed his portion and the portion of somebody else. V'hoi Kohenosei ben Chamtzon ad Yom Mosei. That first Kohen, for the rest of his life, they nicknamed him ben Chamtzon, which means the grabber. We're going to see, the Gemara is going to explain in a minute, where we see that the word chamtzon means somebody who grabs what doesn't belong to him. Suppose this asks, wait a minute, if the Gargaronim were saying a Chotvin, if they're anyway grabbing from others, then what's special about this guy that they gave him this derogatory nickname? And the answer is, the regular Gargaronim, the regular gluttonous Toyanim would grab only the portions that would have otherwise gone to the Tsnuim, the part that the Tsnuim, that their shy, retiring ones are not going to take, because anyway, again, they're not going to be Yotz of the Mitzvah, and it's not going to fill them up either, so they're leaving it untaken, and the Gargaronim go and grab that, fine, so nobody is holding that against them, because otherwise nobody's taking it anyhow. But in this case, this Gargaron grabbed from a fellow Gargaron. So that already they held against him, and for that they nicknamed him Ben Chamtzon.
What's the touch of Gargaron?
Gargaron means a glutton.
Glutton?
I mean, yeah. So the Gemara says, where do we see? So why Ben Chamtzon? Omer Rabba Barav Shila Maikra, where is a posik where we see that Chamtzon is an appropriate name for somebody who grabs things that don't belong to him? The David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Elokai, my God, paltani miyad Rosha, rescue me from the hand of the Rosha, mikach ma'avel v'choymetz, from the hand, from the palm of the ma'avel, the one who does unfairness, v'choymetz, and the one who is choymetz. So we see that choymetz, when Chamtzon is the same shirdish as that, means somebody a gazlan, somebody who grabs things that don't belong to him. Or so it's kind of like a gonim v'naganim, yeah. So therefore, so again, they called this guy Ben Chamtzon. Rava or Rabba Omer Mehacha. Here's another pasuk where we see that the word choymetz means somebody who grabs, somebody who steals. It's actually the word choymetz then is related to the word chomos with a samach. We have words in Lashon Kodesh where samach and a tzaddik interchange. They both sound very similar. By Sardim, actually, they sound even more similar. But even by us Ashkenazim, you can hear a certain similarity between them. And there are words in Lashon Kodesh where they're practically interchangeable. So here, chomos and chomotz are practically the same thing. Anyway, you have another pasuk. Yeshaya says to the people, it's an after of Shabbos Chazon, Limdu hetev, learn to do good, dushu mishpat, seek out justice, ashu chomotz, strengthen the chomotz. Chomotz is a passive verb, meaning the one who was the subject of chomotz. So you have, there was a chomotz who grabbed from him, the chomotz is now the victim of that, the one from whom it was grabbed. So the Navi is telling them, strengthen that person and help him out from, that he shouldn't be a victim in the future. Rashi points out there's a different Gemara that uses the expression that we see from that Ashru Chomoitz V'loi Chomitz, that act there's a different Gemara that says that means strengthen the victim, not the Chomitz, not the grabber. That doesn't belong over here because we're not talking about over here. The Gemara elsewhere in Baruch Kama uses that to learn a halacha that when you have a teveya and a nitzba, you have a plaintiff and a defendant in Beis Din. Reuven takes Shimon to Beis Din with a claim, you stole from me or you wronged me financially or whatever. We first listen to the argument, we first listen to his arguments and only then to the arguments of the other ones. Why? Based on this pasuk, Ashru Chomets. So there, it's relevant to say, Veloi Chomets don't think to listen to the defendant first, to the nitzba first. But here, that's not relevant, so it doesn't belong in our Gemara. Anyway, the point is, again, that we see that the word Chomets means a grabber and Chomets means the one who was grabbed from. So again, this Kohen was nicknamed Ben Chamtzon for what he did. I once saw, actually, somebody wanted to say that there may be also by calling him Ben Chamtzon, they meant also as a play on words. The word, you have like chumos, which is made from chickpeas. So the word for those chickpeas in Arabic and in Lashon Kodesh is something like chomots or something like that. Ches mem tzadik, that's where the word chumos comes from. So maybe since we're saying everybody was getting a bean-sized portion of lechem upon him, then therefore that's another reason why they nicknamed Ben Chamtzon, like the one who grabbed the bean-sized piece of lechem upon him.
Chometz
might also be related, but that's a different thing. Lachem upon him is not chometz, it's matzah. Okay. A few blocks later, so again, still continuing on this topic of what kinds of things you can be mekadesh with. So the Mishnah and the Gemara deal with the question, can you be mekadesh with Isurei Hana? If you have something which is also bana, for example, chometz on Pesach, or Orla, or Kalaya Kerem, or various other things like that, you can't be mekadesh a woman. It doesn't belong to you. It's not considered to belong to you because you're not allowed to get any benefit from it. That's the Mishnah has to tell us that halacha. Otherwise, what? I mean, it's just because the fact is, it's an object. You would have thought, to a goy at least, it's worth a shovel probe. But to you, a Jew, it's also about no. Therefore, you can't. So in that connection, the Gemara also deals with what about, for example, if you want to use the meat or the skin of a shor haniskal. So you have a case in Parshas Mishpatim and in Bava Kamma where a shor has killed somebody and therefore Beis Din puts the shor to death. Now in the pasuk says a shor yisachol v'lo yochol asbsora. You know, to eat the flesh of it, which the Gemara explains means you can't have an bala shor noki. And the Gemara explains it means it's also bana. So the Gemara gets into the question: what about, where do we learn from that the skin is also osabana? So the Gemara says one way we can learn that the skin is osabana is because it says v'lo yochol es b'saray, and the word es means es achofel l'b'saray, something which is secondary to the flesh, namely the skin. But then the Gemara explains not everybody agrees with that drasha, because there's a fundamental question: does the word es in the Torah, is it meant to be used to darshan such things? So the Gemara says Tanya Shimon Hamsuni. So Shimon Hamsuni, or some say Nechemia Hamsuni, he was doubting, every time it says S in the Torah, he was doubting that it means together with. So starting with Bereshis Bara Elokim, Es HaShemayim, the Es HaOretz, so he explained, for example, Es HaShemayim means not just the Shemayim themselves, but everything that's in the Shemayim. Es HaOretz means everything that's in the Oretz. And so on and so forth. What? Es HaShemayim, Es, Es, same thing. Same thing. It's just a difference of whether it has its own, whether it has a chirrup of its own, or whether it's connected with a makaf to the next word. Yeah. So he was going through the whole Torah and Darshan and like that. Every time it says S or Ace, he would find something that it comes to add. But then he reached the pasuk S Hashem your God, you should fear. Pirush. Then he stopped. How could you say that there's anything else comparable, that there should be anything else that you should fear on a level comparable to Hashem? The first I'm talking about, he wasn't so bothered by that. I have to ask Hashem alekecha. Fine, maybe you could say it includes to love the Torah, to love Tamar Chachamim, and so forth. They didn't have such a problem with that. But to say that when it comes to fear, to awe of Hashem, that there should be anything that could be on the same level, he couldn't accept that. So therefore, so he stopped his drasha, so he's not going to darshan in the word S anymore. Omru loy talmidim. So his talmidim tell him, Rebbe kol esin shederash demata he'aleim. What's going to happen by now? You've gone through hundreds of thousands of S's and aces. What's going to happen with all of those? If you're saying now that S Hashem alekechatira cannot be darshan to add anything, then it means all the other drashas on the S's are also invalid. What are you going to do with them? Omolahem. So he tells them, fine. And Omolahem, he says, Kishem shekibalti schar ala jirisha, just as much as I received a reward from Hashem for darshaning them. And why would he get a reward? Marsha points out, the reason why he was doing this in the first place, he meant it for the covered of the Torah. He wants Shimon, or Nechemia Hamsuni, wanted to demonstrate there's no extra word in the Torah. Without his drushes, we would say the word S is a stylistic thing. It's the style of Lashon Kodesh to put the word S to mark the object of a sentence. It doesn't have a meaning of its own. But now he's saying for the covered of the Torah, it's not right to say that there are words in the Torah that are unnecessary. After all, you know, Lashon Kodesh itself was created by Hashem. Hashem could have easily created language without the need for that word S. So therefore, so he figured it's an honor for the Torah this way. But now that he finds that that he can't darshan it this way, then he's saying, until now, I was doubting for the sake of the covered of the Torah. Now that I'm stopping, is because of the covered of Hashem, to not put anything on an equal level to the awe that we should have for Hashem. Therefore, I will receive a reward for that also. What kind of reward? There's the reward of mitzvah, gereret mitzvah, the fact that he was able to, because he did these drashas until now, he's able to do more drashas in the future. There's also the Maharal talks about the idea that when a Talmid Chacham, like Shimon Hamsuni or Nechemia Hamsuni, is coming up with chedushim in Torah, even if in the end it turns out that there's some flaw in his chedushim, and we reject them, and we have all over in Shas, and all over in Rishonim and Achronim, where we say we can't accept something because we had a proof against it, nevertheless, if he was learning and doing it l'shem shamayim, then he still has validity as Torah, and he still gets a schar for having learned Torah Lashma. So that's what he was doing, and therefore he's saying, I'll receive a schar until now, and I'll continue because it was all Lashma.
Not asked him that question, would he have told him? Would he have said, yes, I'll get a
star for... I don't know. If he hadn't asked him, would he tell them that he's getting a star? I don't know. But anyway, so the point is, so Shimon Hamsuni's shitta then, is that the word S is not meant for any drasha. Therefore, according to him, S v'sara, it cannot mean the skin as well, because according to him, S is just meant to mark the object of a sentence. Ad shabodav akiva v'limid, until Rabbi Akiva came and taught, no, the S over there is for a drasha as well. It does include something. S Hashem alekecha tira l'rabbis tamar chachamim. Yes, it comes to include that you should also have fear and awe for Talmud Chachamim. Like it says in Pirkei Avos, murder Rabbah to murder Shemayim. The fear that you have for your Rebbe should be on a level comparable to the fear that you have of Hashem. But Rabbi Akiva darshened it, Shimon Hamsuni, or Nechemiah Hamsuni, didn't accept that idea, so therefore that's the Gemara saying you end up with machloikas, whether the word S is meant to come and darshen anything. Why is Rabbi Akiva particularly the one to do that? There's a number of interesting explanations. One of them is that Rabbi Akiva himself, as we know famously, was once an Amoretz, and he hated the Chachamim. He said, if I had a chance, I would bite them like a donkey. So he's uniquely positioned to say now that he became a Talmud Chacham himself, to realize, on the contrary, the tremendous respect and awe that you should have for a Talmud Chacham, even comparable to Hashem. There's another point as well that he saw what happened to his Talmidim. We know what happened to them, unfortunately. His 24,000 Talmidim, like Nagu Kavod Zebazeh, they didn't show the proper respect for one another and they all passed away during Sfiras HaOmer. So therefore, he's more than anybody else. He can see the importance of honoring Talmid Chachamim on a level comparable to Hashem. And there's an interesting vert, actually, that it's precisely this story itself that led Rabbi Akiva to this realization. He's seeing, here you have Shimon Hamsuni, or Nechemiah Hamsuni, has spent years and years on these researches of what every S in the Torah could mean. And then, because he finds Es Hashem al Kachatira, which according to his shitta cannot be used to mean anything, then he rejects the whole thing. He's willing to throw away years and work and everything, all just because for the MS. So that leads Rabbi Akiva to realize, you know what, oh, now that gives you an idea what respect you should have for a Talmud Chacham, comparable to the respect for Hashem. There's also a verse from the Kotzker, by the way, a short verse that says, Es Hashem al-Kechatira l'adabas Talmud Chachamim, means that Talmud Chacham had better not forget. He also has a mitzvah to fear Hashem. He shouldn't think that his thing is just to learn Torah and forget about the notion on Torah. He has to realize that l'adabas Talmud Chachamim, he also has that mitzvah as well. No, he didn't. That's the point. That's the Gemara's establishing that we see from this that there remains a machlokes whether S comes to add anything. Shimon Hamsuni did not accept Rabbi Akiva's opinion that S Hashem al-Kechatira means l'rabbis Talmud Chachamim, and therefore he stayed with the opinion from then on that S is not meant to teach us anything special and it's just a stylistic feature of Lashon Kodesh. Yes.
So he was proved wrong with one S on his years of research, and then when someone finally tells him that his research could continue because it does mean something, then he's just like, no, I don't want it.
But he knew he couldn't accept that. He couldn't accept, according to his way of understanding, that that could be correct. Fine, Rabbi Akiva, you want to hold that way, Gesundheit. Hey, I cannot accept that, according to my shitta, as being correct. And therefore, the honest and truthful thing to do would be to continue to say that S does not mean anything, that it does not teach us anything. Yes, I could use as an excuse. I could say, fine, I accept what Rabbi Akiva said, but he knew that that wouldn't be the MS of what he truly holds. And MS is vital for, you have to learn, and learning Torah itself is MS. It can't be based on Sheker, and therefore, yeah.
So when a person reads it more and he reads it wrong, is he getting scared?
So he's getting scared as long as he sincerely is trying to make an effort. That's what we're saying. That's what the Maharal is saying in a safer Nesivus Olam. Yeah, as long as the Reb Levick, actually, the Rebbe's father, has an expression about it even more strongly. He says, you know, you have sometimes the Gemara will bring an opinion of an Amora, and then afterwards the Gemara will say, Bedusei. It's a fiction. It's like something completely untrue. Nevertheless, it's still there in the Torah. It's still part of the Gemara. So Reb Levick has the expression, the very same Ebishter, the very same Nosen HaTorah, who gave the Torah, also said that he was a Svara, but that you should consider it Vedusa. So it's still part of the Torah. It's still part of Torah's Emes, but it's a part of Torah which, strangely enough, has to be treated as though it's not true, but really it's still part of the eternal truth of the Torah. Onward. Getting back now, again, this is one of those places where Ein Yaakov has the pieces of Gemara out of order. I don't really know why he does this, especially because this directly relates to that one before about the Lashon HaPanim. But anyway, again, you have this machloikas in the this point, whether if a Kohen is going to use a piece of the Kodshim that he got in the Bais Mikdash, if he wants it to use to be Mekadesh a woman, will that work or not? Is it considered his mom, basically? So the Gemara tells, Tanan Abanan, La'achat Tirose Shorav Meir, after the Meir passed away, Amalahem Rabbi Yehuda L'Talmidim. Rabbi Yehuda says to his Talmidim, Al Yikonsu Talmidid of Meir L'Kam. I do not want the Talmidim of the Meir to come here into my Bais Medrash. Mepnei Shekan Tironim Heim, because they're quarrelsome people. Loy lumud Torah hem boyim. They're not coming to learn Torah. Elo l'kapachenu b'halochas hem boyim. They're just coming to literally l'kapachenu means to cut us off. So Rashi explains, like to cut off our feet to show us like we have no leg to stand on when it comes to Torah discussion. Like they're trying to show off as though only they have a true knowledge of Torah and we don't, and they can slug us up. So the kapcheinu b'halachas means to annoy us, or to slog us up in halachas. It's telling us something. It's a tayelus. It's telling them for a reason. He's saying, you know, we have to have a seder in the mezmerish over here, and we can't allow them to disrupt it.
Dr. Derek, Rabbi Meir?
Apparently, Rabbi Meir would have felt that it was. Wait, we'll see. Dochak sumchus v'nichnas. But sumchus, one of Rameyer's senior talmidim, pushed his way in and got into the Beis Medrash. By the way, you go nowadays to the cave of Rameyer Balanes, you'll find over there along the wall, you have an area over there marked as the cave of sumchus. So the Talmud is actually buried together with the devoted Talmud is buried together with his Rebbe. So here we see that, yes, sumchus wants to uphold and bring out a halacha that Rameyer says, that he manages to make his way into the Beis Medrash. Almost this identical story, by the way, is also told in the Gemara in Nozir, involving a different halachas of a pashtus. There was one time that he came in, and then he mentioned these two halachas, one in connection with the din in Hilchos Nezirus, and one in connection with the din here in Hilchos Kedushin. Anyway, Omalahem and Sumchus, when he's in the Beis Medrash, he tells them, Kach Shonali Rameyer, this is what Rameyer taught me, HaMekadosh V'Chelka, if a Kohen is Mekadosh, a woman with his portion of Kodshim, Bein B'Kodshe Kodshim or Bein Kodshim Kalim, whether he uses Kodshe Kodshim, for example, he got a piece of a Chatos, or whether Kodshim Kalim, for example, a Shlomim, Loi Kiddush, it's not a valid Kiddushin, because Rameyer holds that it's not considered his moment, and the Gemara explains that basically Rameyer holds its moment Gavoya. Essentially, it's the property of Hashem allows the Kohenim to eat it. It's called Meshuchan Gavoya Kazochu. There is Zoycha in it from the table of Hashem, but it doesn't basically belong to them. Well, cost Rabbi Yehuda Aleihem. Rabbi Yehuda got angry at the Talmidim for allowing the intruder, for allowing Sumchus in. Omalahem, he says to them, Loitach Amarki Lachem Alikon to Talmidim Rameir Lakan. Didn't I tell you don't let Rameir's Talmidim in here, Mephesha Kantaronim Haim, because they're quarrelsome, argumentative people. They're not coming to learn Torah Lashma, they're just coming to annoy us and slug us up in halachas. Why is Sumchus coming in and almost like bursting his way in, Dochak Sumchus V'nichnas, as though like he has an urgent, practical Shaila? And as though like all he wants to do is show off his Rebbe's opinion, which I, Rabbi Yehuda, disagree with, you have to ask, why is he even saying that conceivably the Kohen could be Mekadosh with Kodshe Kodshim? Kodshe Kodshim, Chatos, and Ola, Osham, etc., the meat of them has to stay inside the Azara. If it has to be eaten in the Azara, if it's taken out, it becomes possible. So Rabbi Yehuda says, V'chi'isha ba'azara minayin. How does a woman ever get into the Azara in the first place? How would there ever be a possibility that a man is going to be Mekadosh a woman with Kodshe Kodshim? If he gives it to her, she's not going to come into the Azara, and if he takes it out of the Azara and gives it to her, it's going to become possible. Anyway, it can't be eaten. So, of course, the Kedushin wouldn't be valid. It has to be burnt. And inside the Azara, she's not going to come in. So Rashi says that actually, so Rashi refers to a Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Kelim that says that, where Rashi says, it says over there in the Mishnah that women don't come into the Azara. Tosfos points out that actually the Mishnah there in Kelim does not actually say that. It says they are described the levels of Kedusha. You have Eretz Yisrael is holier than all other countries. Yerushalayim is holier than the rest of Eretz Yisrael. The Harabayis is more than Yerushalayim and so forth. It goes through the 10 levels of Kedusha all the way up to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So it says there that the Ezra Yisrael is that a Mechosu Kippurim can't come in there. Somebody who had certain kinds of tumas that require him to bring a korban. For example, a Mitzora, a Zov, etc. So they can't come into the Azara until they bring their korbanos. But it doesn't say anything about that women not coming into the Azara. So there are Achroin. So in other words, Tosfos is saying there doesn't seem to be a basis for there to be an Iser for women to enter the Azara, which Rashi seems to be implying that there is such an Iser. So there are Achroinim, we'll talk about, Yosef Engel talks about that maybe there are sources that do suggest that there is an actual issue to that effect. If nothing else, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, practically speaking, we know the men and women have to be kept apart. You have an Ezra's Noshim in the Beis HaMikdash, and even during Simchas Beis HaSheva, they would build the special, the balconies over there to keep the men and women apart, so that for that reason alone, women aren't going to come into the Azorah, because then they're going to end up mingling with the men. Anyway, Tosfos says that's not what Rabbi Yehuda means. It doesn't mean they're also to come into the Azorah. And practically speaking, women generally don't come into the Azara. It would be a bizoyan. It's not something common to do. So now Rabbi Yehuda is bothered by, why is Rabbi Meir saying this? And why is Sumfos announcing that this is what Rabbi Meir said? It seems like an impractical thing to even talk about. It's never going to happen that Kiddushin could potentially take place in the Azara involving Kodshe.
Kodshim Kalim,
fine, is not a problem. Yeah, of course, you can take them anywhere in Yerushalayim, yeah. We find the machloikas between the mayor and another town, and very often is by plug there is going to be a Rabbi Yehuda. So he's saying to his Talmidim, you shouldn't have let Sumchus in here, because now it's just disrupting our learning here in the Beis HaMikdash, and he's just asking something which is anyway not even realistic. Yeah, I mean, they're contemporaries, but now that Rameir has passed away, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, fine, listen, when Rameir himself was alive, fine, if he wants to come into the Beis HaMikdash and discuss things with us, fine. But now his Talmidim, he says, straight. Amr Rabbi Yossi, so Rabbi Yossi, was also present there at the time, he says, Yoimru, now we have a problem. Yoimru, people are going to say, Meir Shochab, Meir has lain down and passed away. Yehuda Koas, Yehuda has gotten angry. Yossi Shosak, Yossi meaning I myself am quiet. Divrei Torah, Matahayolah, what's going to happen with the words of Torah? If the mayor is not around to teach us Torah anymore, and Rabbi Yehuda is angry, and as we know that when a person is angry, he tends to make mistakes in Torah, we find even Moshe Rabbeinu, so if I'm quiet, what's going to happen with the Torah? Ben Yehoyada here, and also in Nazir, explains in a couple of different ways what Rabbi Yossi means by this exactly. The gist of it is basically he's saying, listen, the fact that nobody right now understands what the mayor meant, fine, he passed away. People will say to themselves, you know what, it doesn't mean that what he's saying is invalid. They know if he was alive, he would have been able to defend what he's saying. They know there must be some way of transferring what he says. Rabbi Yehuda, they're going to say, fine, he doesn't understand because he got angry, and like Marsha is saying, that causes him to forget what the Torah says. But the fact is, if I don't speak up, people are going to think there is no way of defending what the mayor said and what's going to happen to his Torah. It's not right. So Rabbi Yossi answers, here, I'll tell you the answer. I'll tell you what Rabbi Meir meant. First of all, couldn't it conceivably happen that a man accepts Kiddushin on behalf of his daughter, who is a Ketana, in the Azara? Throughout the Masechta, it talks about it, throughout the Masechta, and also in Ksubas, it talks about that when a girl is a Ketana, or even a Naira, then her father can accept Kiddushin on her behalf. So very simple, says Rabbi Yossi. You could have that Reuven wants to be Mekadosh Rochel, but Rochel is a Ketana or a Naira. Fine, she herself is not going to come into the Azara, but her father will go into the Azara and accept the Kiddushin on her behalf from Reuven the Kohen. So that's perfectly possible. Second of all, says Rabbi Yossi, don't you think it's possible that Rochel herself could appoint a shliach, which is also discussed throughout the Masechta, to accept the kedushin on her behalf? That's also perfectly valid, and the shliach could be a man. And also, anyway, after all, you have to deal with the question, what would happen if she did push her way in? Fine, it's not usual for her to go into the Azara. Maybe there's actually an Isser for her to. The fact remains, it is conceivable that she could be in the Azara, having gotten in there illegally, even, let's say. So in short, Rabbi Yossi is saying, Rabbi Yehuda, don't be angry and then saying that they're only coming with Apcheni Ba'alochas. What the mayor said is actually something which is very much Negeya L'maisa, and therefore it's legitimate for Sumchus to bring this up in the Beis Medrash and to bring up Rameir's opinion, and then we can discuss the pros and cons of it and decide what the halacha should be. Rabbi Yossi is defending Rameir's position. He's not a student, he's his chaver, which is why he's using first names. He's not saying Reb Meir Shochav, Reb Yehuda Koss. He's saying Meir and Yehuda, because they're all colleagues, they're all chaverim, they're all calling each other by their first names. Actually, Ben Yehoyada points out, in the initial thing, when Rabbi Yehuda made his announcement, he did use Rabbi Meir's title. He didn't say, Al Yukonsu Talmidim Meir Lakan. He said, Al Yukonsu Talmidim Reb Meir Lakan. Why? Because he wanted to stress, I have nothing personal against Rabbi Meir. I have the highest respect for him, but his Talmidim are argumentative types, and I'm concerned that they're going to disrupt things in the Beis HaMikdash. But here, Rabbi Yossi has no particular need to do that, so therefore he can just speak of himself and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir as colleagues and just be using first names like Chavarim do with each other.
And the person saw the girl before you, Makadish, through the father?
Yeah, I mean, you have at the beginning of the Perek, it talks about Osul Adam, she Kaddish Isha, Ad Shirena. A man is not supposed to be Makadish, a woman, until he sees her. She herself is not supposed to be Miskadish until she says, for the father is not supposed to accept Kedushin on her behalf unless she says, I want to marry this guy. Nevertheless, the fact is, throughout the Masechta, particularly in this Perek and in the next Perek, it does deal with all the ramifications of the possible dinim when a man is Makadish, a woman, through a Shliach, or when a father accepts Kedushin unilaterally on behalf of his daughter, etc. Such things are possible, and they are valid Kedushin in Atorah, and require a get, and require a litzer yibum, etc., and everything that valid Kedushin would be, and therefore Rabbi Yossi is saying, what Rabbi Meir is saying is not something unrealistic. There's actually, it's very, very possible for this to happen, and it's something that we should be discussing in the Mishnah.
Okay.
In the same vein, by the way, the story in Nazir is also that Sumchus comes in and says a halacha in the name of Rabbi Meir, which also Rabbi Yehuda gets angry for the same reason over there. He says again, the statement that Rabbi Meir is saying seems to be unrealistic. It doesn't seem to resemble anything that could possibly be in the real world. And again, Rabbi Yossi explains over there that actually it could. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ga'ola for Yud Aleph Elul. So there was a sicha, Re'ei Tavshin Nun Aleph, which was Shabbos Rosh Chodesh Elul, where the Rebbe was talking about the importance of publicizing everywhere about the special avodah in Chodesh Elul. You have the five famous sets of Rosh Tevis that represent Elul. You have Tefillah represented by the word Ina L'Yod, the Torah represented by Ina L'Yod of Esamdi Lach, the Orei Mikla. Tefillah represented by Anila Dodi V'Dodi Li, B'milas Fasadim by the expression from the Megillah Ishla Re'ehu Matanas Le'Avyonim, Tshuva as in the expression of Mol Hashem Alakacha Es Levavcha Ve'Es Levav, and then also in later years that ever started talking about the remez to Geula in Chodesh El as well. You have the initials of Ashiro Hashem Vayomru Lamer. There's a sicha that ever talked about in that case why the words are out of order, but anyway. So especially we should stress this point about Geula. That means to announce and publicize everywhere using Dvorim Ayot using words that come from the heart, which as we know, there was an Achnosim al Alev, that Hashem told us through the Nevi'im, tells every single Yid, as it says at that in the beginning of that parasha, Re'ei Anochi Nosim Lefneichem Hayom Bracha, see that I'm putting in front of you Bracha, you can see it with your own eyes, and to, even today we should be able to see Be'enei Boser, the Bracha of the Gola Amidus Hashlein. What about Ki Lulayis Ma'amonu? That's Elul backwards, yeah, there's that too, yeah. Okay. Continuing with halachas of Elul, so when you're saying slichas, we have several times in slichas where we say the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachman. If a person is saying slichas not with a minion, then he can't say them derech tefillah of akasha. He can't say them as a tefillah kind of thing because that's meant to be said only with tzidl. What he could do is he could say it like leaning in the Torah with trup. You have a similar thing, and it says in some Tilos Hashem Sedurim, you have a footnote there by Tachnun, by Shachos and Mincha, that says the same thing, although I've seen, as I think in Dain Raskin Sidur, that maybe that's not so Oiskehal, and that maybe it's not necessarily that would be the case. Also, you have various places in the Slichas where it mentions about the Shloish Esrei Midas. For example, you have in Kael Melech, you have the expression, Zechor Lano Ayon Bris Shloish Esrei. So those you should also skip, because again, the Bris Shloish Esrei is meant to be invoked only with a minion. Then you also have, there are a few paragraphs in Slichas that are in Aramaic, Machay Umase, Moran Devishmaya. Those are also to be said only with a minion for the reason of, based on what we learned a while back in Sota, that the Malachi Asharis don't understand or don't pay attention to Aramaic, and when a person is davening miyachidus, he needs the malachi asharis to bring his tefillas to the Eidoshtev, and if he's saying his tefillas in Aramaic, then they're not going to bother with it, as opposed to the tzibur doesn't need malachim to bring their tefillas to the Eidoshtev, because Hashem always accepts the tefillas of the tzibur, and therefore they can say these paragraphs in Aramaic, and no problem.
If you daven in English, the malachim bring it up?
So if you daven in English, so that's really subject to the machloikas of, when we learned about this in Soita, there's a discussion among Rishonim, when the Gemara says that the malachim don't know, don't, ain't a makirin, b'loshan arami. First of all, does it mean they don't understand it? Or does it mean they understand it, but they don't consider it a valid language? And then, according to that way of looking at it, maybe it's specifically Aramaic, because they see Aramaic as a corrupted form of Lashon Kodesh. In which case, other languages that are not really directly related to Lashon Kodesh, such as English, might not, the Malachim might not have a problem with those.
The Torah is translated into 70 languages.
The Torah is translated into 70 languages, but nevertheless, the Torah is translated into Aramaic. We learned yesterday that Targum Onkelos is given Lamoshe Sinai. But nevertheless, though, there is that idea that, according to some of the Rishonim, that Aramaic, on the other hand, the Malachim, look down on it and consider it, it's like Lashon Kodesh, but it's not like Lashon Kodesh, and therefore they consider it a demeaning language and they don't want to deal with it. Talmud is written in Aramaic.
English has, like, sounds from all languages.
English borrows from other languages, but it's not related to them, though. Languages don't become related by borrowing from other languages.